Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
Welcome back. The championship game is over, and so is the season. We're here to break down the championship. Let's all take a breath. I'm going to rep my Quit Being a Trigger Pansy shirt for those that need it. So there's a lot of things going on both in and outside of sporting news that are affecting people. So take a breath and realize that it's not as bad as you think. And we're going to break down some college football. So what's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back to the College Football Roundtable, or you can call it two NCOs and an O. Like we got a little bit of flip today.
Freaking LT's lost again.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, I haven't had another NCO to say that to all season.
So we have another guy that'll pop in. I think Zop will be here shortly. But either way, I'm your host, Rob, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got a football fan extraordinaire and a really good friend of mine from we got to get Zop on. He's having some technical difficulties because it does not. There he goes. He's booting up. All right. We got him. Yes. And so now we're even. So we got two O's and two NCOs. So this should be even a better show, right? But
actually, we're down two to one, man. Here's more solutions on that side. Come on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But I'm your host, Robin Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got the notorious ZOP calling in tonight. Dano is taking the day off, so I had to bring up some backup. So I got Zop here. He's a fan of the show, and he's also Army football and just a college football nerd like the rest of us. So it helps me out to kind of balance this thing out. We have football fan and published author Joe Troutman, as you see me pointing with the knife hand to his box in the corner. And then we've got Trigger Joe calling from the home of the Big House. How are we doing, guys? We'll start with Sergeant Troutman, roll over to Zop, and then end with Joe. How are things going?
Things are great. Watched a great game. Was an awesome season. It was great to see some of the changes that were made, and look forward to the future. Just love football.
Joe, how about you?
I mean, as a Michigan fan, it was almost like an out-of-body experience last night watching Ohio State and Notre Dame compete for all the marbles. You know, on one side, you're praying for an act of God and the game to be canceled and never played again, so both teams lose. On the other hand, Michigan beat this year's national champion, so I guess it's good.
Yeah, that's fair. Zop, how about you?
Listen, long season, a lot of games. And I think my overall commentary as far as the playoffs and the way that they went down is 12 is too many. And I think we wasted a week. I think that it was almost like whoever's going to go away is just going to get beat up. And it was, I don't know, I think waste of time, maybe a week off, focus on the Army-Navy game, a little bias there, but then get into an 18 tournament.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about that. And I also think that there's going to be some corrections to the transfer portal. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show because, like, it's burning right now, you know, and it's only going to get worse until they figure something out. I have a solution and we can talk about it. But most importantly, we have a sponsor here at As for Football. So if you listen to the show at all this season, we have the realtor for you if you're PCSing to the Fort Liberty area. Her name is Jocelyn Bradley. Jocelyn spent her Army career in logistics. There she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream homes when you're in the market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you in a move anywhere across the country. So if you're in the market for a home, Jocelyn should be your first call. She's decided to support us here at As for Football this season, and she is the exact right person to get you into the home of your dreams. So we're going to break down the national championship game, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the transfer portal and some of the other crazy stuff that is going on. But, you know, if you live under a rock or weren't paying attention, like, you should have at least watched the first half of the game because you had the day off. But the Ohio State University Buckeyes took on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish in the inaugural 12-team playoff in college football. For the sake of argument, it's a matchup between the two best teams in college football, question mark. I mean, maybe. And I say question mark because – arguably they were the two hottest teams for sure. Maybe not the two best teams. And that's arguable. If you're an Ohio State fan, you're probably ready to, you know, bash me about the head and shoulders. And the Notre Dame faithful, you know, they had their opinions as well. And that's why they play the games, folks, so we can get to the end, right? So, you know, recap the first half really quickly. The Irish started off with a strong 18-play, 9-minute and 45-second drive. Looked a little bit like the Army football team this week. A lot of QB power. They looked like they were in full command of the game. Their offensive line was getting a great push. Moved the Buckeyes' defensive line, which not anybody did most of the season. And then had several fourth down conversions and looked really, really strong going into it. And then the Buckeyes got the ball. And 31 points later, you know, it was almost halftime. The weird thing was Will Howard, man, went on a tear. So he was 14 for 15 in the first half with two TD passes, which is just gross. But that was the whole reason why he came to Ohio State, was to perform like that. And if you saw him in the preseason and as he went throughout the season, like, his whole goal was to win a national championship with Ohio State. So it worked out for him. I also think it was kind of a breakout game for Quinshon Judkins. Like, dude looked amazing, and was this all season, you know? And I know there's, you know, comments, and we even commented about the show, particularly after the Michigan loss, that it was like, you've got a 1-2 punch of Henderson and Judkins, and they didn't look that impressive. But like, when you really look at their final stats, both of those guys, I think, you know, Judkins definitely was over 1,000 yards rushing, and Travion Henderson was very, very close. I mean, like, who would have thought Ohio State would have 2,000 yard rushers in the backfield? Not this guy at the beginning of the season, right? And then, of course, Jeremiah Smith, who got shut down against the University of Texas in their playoff game, came out and had two huge plays that were epic. And I think, like, on that long throw in the third quarter, had Will Howard led him a little bit more, that would have been a touchdown, because he had to slow down to
that
come
thing
back
wasn't
to
even
that
in the screen yet, and he was in third gear trying to let it catch him.
Yeah, like that was crazy. Thoughts on the first half? So we'll go Sark Trautman, Zopp, and then Trigger Joe. What do you think?
The first half, like you said, that first drive, it looked like Notre Dame was going to hang in there. And then they didn't look like that again for pretty much till midway through the third quarter. And they couldn't run the ball at all the whole entire game. If you take away Riley Leonard, they had like 13 yards rushing. They took the backs completely out of the game.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, before we go to Zop, like, do we think like Jeremiah Love was hurt as well? Because he had been nicked up, you know.
He was nicked the whole time. He had a knee injury.
They played him very, very sparingly.
Yeah, I mean, but then the other part of it is like, if you've got your cornerstone key running back that's like putting up yards like freshman All-American, but you put him into block, right? Like, there's probably somebody else in the depth chart that you could assume a lot less risk with, you know, particularly if this guy's going to be coming back to Notre Dame next season. I just don't understand that move. Zop, how about you? What did you think about the first half?
I think that Notre Dame did everything they could have possibly done on that first drive to be successful and set yourself up for establishing, you know, the line of scrimmage. They moved the ball well, little chunks here and there. It was a great sustained drive, but it's after that they look done. It looked like I got everything I got. I left it out on the field for that first drive, and after that they look confused. I think Ohio State was split in gaps. It wasn't like man for man. We're just gonna, you know, just run down. It was, there was a little bit of movement, a little bit of shifting on the defensive line, right, you know, pre-snap. And I think that as soon as, you know, it went 7-7 and playing more Judkins, I thought was critical, because it was, you know, you have two rested backs. And I think that in the beginning of the year, I talked about having two of the top five backs in college football in the same backfield.
Yeah.
And they were more effective because they were always rested, splitting the carries and a backfield by committee. And I think they did that really well in the first half. I think ball distribution was great. I think play calling was great. Mm-hmm. And once they stepped on the gas, I think just short of, you know, stepping on their neck in the second quarter, you know, it was 1.5 quarters of domination by Ohio State in the first half.
Yeah, for sure. Joe, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, there was all over the internet this morning, they're calling it, you know, an epic drive that Notre Dame started the game with. And I agree, that was the definition of the way you start a big-time football game. The problem is Ohio State answered the very next time they got the ball, and when they got started, they did not stop. And I'm going to go a little off script here, but, you know, Michigan beat Ohio State by scoring 10 less points than Notre Dame did. That offense has a good game, and they win against Michigan by 2 touchdowns. And I'm a Michigan fan. That offense was what finally got dialed in.
Yeah,
because the defense against Michigan was great. We scored 13 points. It was just, you know, Ryan Howard, talking about an office character. Will Howard, I think he knew what was at stake. And you know, when all the chips were down, he played his best football. And that's what champions do. So I hate saying it because I'm a Michigan diehard. But, you know, good on you. Resign Ryan Day, please. but, you know, the Buckeyes rattle off 31 unanswered points until the Irish were able to score at 7:52 in the third quarter. By that time, Quinshon Judkins looked like a well-oiled machine, and he was just gashing the Notre Dame defense. And you cannot spot this Ohio State team 31 unanswered points and ever win. You just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, and so my comment on the first half, and it kind of is capturing the whole game too, is just like, if you look at Notre Dame's performances when they played teams that had a, you know, a defense that was in the top third of college football, they only scored 20 something points, right? I think the most was like 27 or 28. Like when they played teams that they were supposed to blow out, they whooped them pretty soundly. You know, like they really put it on Florida State, but we all know how Florida State went this season, right? But the reality of it is like, they knew, and they talked about it, like it sounded like I was listening to commentary for an Army game, you know, when they were like, oh man, if these guys get behind the sticks or they get back, you know, they get down on the scoreboard, they aren't going to be able to come back because their offense is not designed to have these big explosive chunk plays. Like it literally was like they were reading the Army playbook, you know, or at least for commentary when they were talking about it. And I think the other thing that I saw was confidence, right? And I say that because, like, Will Howard's like winking at the sidelines. He's dapping people up. He's love bombing everybody, you know. And then Marcus Freeman with 27 seconds left and 2 timeouts, lets the clock run out and they go into the locker room. You know what I mean? Like, that tells me that you're not confident in your team. Like, hey man, work the sidelines. I've got two timeouts. Try and get in the field goal position and like get some momentum back. But instead, you kind of just sat on it and, you know, and let your team that was already flat go even flatter into the locker room. And I know that's a coaching thing. And maybe, you know, maybe his guys were nicked up more than we know. And he's a coach, so he has a better assessment of his players. But watching it on TV, I was like, oh, that's a really bad look. Like, if I'm an offensive player at Notre Dame, I'm going, hey, coach, like, what's up? Give us a chance to at least try to get back in it. Because, yeah, they had their explosion in the third quarter, and so I'm assuming that, you know, some words were had at halftime. But like, if you are trying to win, if you're how can I say this and not sound like a total dick? It literally is like, if you're trying to play championship football, you don't do that to your team.
Well, that, and I think that the players' reactions to whatever it was, I don't think they had a killer instinct. I didn't see him running around off the edge against Georgia, who is easily as, you know, athletically talented as Ohio State. The edge rushers were nearly a factor. I think they were playing very conservative, although they were making big mistakes. They didn't have any turnovers. Notre Dame, you know, kind of were playing not to lose. I mean, it was the, let's keep this in check. Let's keep it down. We're only going to be down, you know, a couple scores at halftime. We can come back from this. The one thing that they did earlier in the playoff series is when Leonard went out, they instituted that quick throw game where it wasn't, you know, high vertical and it wasn't a whole bunch of trickeration. It was 8 to 10 yards in the seams, sit routes, option routes, things that just kept the ball moving. And they didn't do that all in the first half. So I think they kind of dug themselves a huge hole by not adapting or not doing anything that was, you know, that could be sniffed out in about 2 seconds by Ohio State's defense.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Leonard, he looked rattled. I mean, he looked rattled. He wasn't staying. He's not the guy that stays in the pocket anyhow. But, I mean, his clock was 1-2. I'm out of the pocket, even when the rush wasn't even there. Yeah. And, I mean, he wasn't setting up. He was rattled.
Yeah, and that you know, that goes into my second half comment, but like we can talk about it now. It's like you could legitimately see that something was going on in his psyche. Either he was sick, he had an injury that was undisclosed, because he did not look like he was all there. And it sucks, because it's like, look, what a competitor. Like when he was at Duke, I was like, man, this kid is unbelievable. Like he is going to make a difference. You know, and I thought he was going to ride it out with the Blue Devils for a while, but I think that's going to become the Notre Dame MO, is to poach the best quarterback in the ACC and, you know, move forward. But I think the benefit to them would be is to build a team and have a quarterback that grew up in the system, because I think part of their struggles in the early half of the season, or even why they lost to NIU, was because they hadn't found their identity yet. And then when they found their identity and it was like, oh, hey, we got a quarterback that can run, let's keep giving him the ball, feed that kid the rock. But the other piece of it is like, you can get away with that when you're, you know, smashing your body into Army and Navy players. But like when you're running into freaking Jack Sawyer and JTT, that's a little bit of, you know, it's a little bit of a difference. And again, this goes back into the strength of schedule discussion that everybody's going to whine about and complain, like Notre Dame had a soft schedule. Yes, maybe. But what happened to like Georgia and Bama and all these other teams that are supposed to be these world beaters, and they lost? Joe, you had a point.
Oh, I just agree that Notre Dame's schedule is not anything of a conference schedule.
Yeah,
I'll say something about it later.
Yeah,
the super conferences are deeper, and so the SEC now, and the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, and now the Big 10 / 27, however many are now, you know, hanging out on there. I mean, you have half of the truly competitive football teams consumed in two conferences.
Yeah.
And so in order to even get yourself out of there, so it's almost like, you know, what the NFC North used to do, you know, you just beat each other up and then you tenderized and got into the playoffs, and then you got your clocks cleaned by every other division out there. And yep. So that's going to happen more and more. And I think the dilution of talent too is, you know, the SEC, aside from, you know, the greater Atlanta area that feeds into Georgia, you know, it's like, it's the economy, stupid, follow the money. Yeah. Georgia is the only one that can truly sustain this NIL, you know, payment type of deal, and where the professional sports of the state of Mississippi and the state of Alabama rely are solely into their college football.
Yeah.
And they don't have the corporate structure or the money feeding in there. And now, in addition to that, they're going to get a step down in talent, and they're going to beat the hell out of each other. And for the past two seasons, it's follow the money. Ohio State did a study 4 years ago to say, what is going to keep me in the top five in this NIL environment in order to consistently be top five? And the number was $13 million.
Yep.
This year, they fielded a team that was worth $20 million. And although they didn't pay or have to fish out, you know, the big ones that came in, Howard and Judkins, their roster was still worth $20 million. So these superpower conferences, you're going to see the divide of where there are metropolitan ties more so in, I think, the Big Ten than the SEC. I think Texas, Austin, Texas is going to feed some money into there. They're going to get smart and pay their players, and they will be consistently top 10 at a minimum from here on down the road.
Yeah, I think statistically what you're looking at is like you said, Zop, like regions that have more money are going to apply the like if I have multiple, like take North Carolina, for example, I have what, 17 universities here or whatever, right? About seven that play at the FBS level. So if I'm an investor or an NIL person, where am I going to go? I'm probably going to go where the money is. So if I'm a football, you know, if I want to build my football program, I don't know, let's say there's a team that wears like light blue and they call themselves the Tar Heels. And what did they do? They went out and they got Bill Belichick, who is the guy that, you know, made Tom Brady a household name. So now if I'm a quarterback that's kind of on the fence about where I'm going to go, I've got the guy that coached Brady for years. I know that there's money at UNC because their basketball program is phenomenal every season. So if I can start building the football team up, that's two revenue generating sports that are going to put a lot of cash in the state of North Carolina. And do not be surprised if we see the Tar Heels maybe in the next two seasons, you know, snaking around in the, you know, in the playoff. It's going to happen. Like, why? Because they've got the money and the talent, then they can bring in the talent to do it.
And all they've got to do is Clemson and Miami, who both like to choke.
Fair point. Fair point.
Yes, just saying.
And speaking of money, we got somebody that can help you save some money. So if you listen to this show at all, we have a sponsor here. His name's Craig Oxane. He's the area sales rep for the Money Store. He's class of 1994, can lend in all 50 states, based out of Chicago, and one of the most significant VA lenders in the country. Yes, he can give you super competitive rates, and he's going to give you the best deal you possibly can. Friends, the whole mortgage process is super confusing with interest rates moving all over the place. Now is not the time to deal with some clown who's just trying to make a buck off of you. Deal with somebody that cares, not a call center, not some random big box bank or mindless website. So this is how the Westport Network functions. Craig's going to help us stay in business here at Ask for Football, and we're going to help you get a better deal on a mortgage by introducing you to the very man that you need to meet. Craig doesn't charge lending fees for veterans, so that's $1,300 savings. And as Dan would say, get that money, friends. Craig Oxane, VP of Residential Lending, look him up, or you can just go to our website, click on his little business card, and you'll be able to see it.
I got a personal plug for Craig, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's refinanced my house twice and nice. Made it quicker than 30 days. And all that stuff that you said was true. And the quality of service was unmatched. Any nice. Other place that I've been to.
Wow. That's see, there you go. Look down here.
Proof is in the pudding.
Yep. Paid endorsement. All right. So, I mean, this came up in the chat, like what impact will the new NCAA roster limit of 105 have on Army? Since technically they don't have to give athletic scholarships, Army's roster is around 200. I mean, honestly, that's a tough call. And I don't know the insides and outs of like the total roster numbers. And Zop, you may have a little bit more information, you know, being a football.
And I think really what it comes down to the rules is how many you're legally allowed to suit up, how many you're allowed to legally travel on away games. So I think that though there are people that are practicing, it's almost like the scout team numbers and the JVs and the freshmen kind of pseudo associations across Division One, you know, like the walk-on program, and they don't have to scholarship these types of people. I think the rosters and the numbers reflect a larger number outside of what the actual program says. So yeah. I think that we do have an advantage of having a lot of people available to be associated with the team, but I think that the formal membership of the team and the other rules behind it, I think are way different than the, you know, the 200 number that may be represented in people who know about our program.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good question, but thanks for the answer. Because, again, I'm not on the inside and the inside of the Army football program, but that's a good thing to know. And let's move on to the second half, though, right? I think, like I said, I would have loved to be a fly on the wall to see what Coach Freeman said to the Irish at halftime. Like, literally, he had a couple dudes that he totally lit a fire up underneath, because Jaden Greathouse, that guy exploded in the second half, but that's not surprising in his performance, because he did the exact same thing against Penn State, right? I mean, like, this guy, talent for days. I think he just had to get it. Irish defense woke up, forced a beautiful turnover against Emeka Abuka. That guy's like really solid hands guy, and they punched the ball out, got a turnover, and then again, it didn't pay off, right? Like you win games like Notre Dame has won games all season long by getting a turnover and creating points out of those turnovers. And you drive the field, chew up a whole bunch of time off the clock, go for the field goal, and it doinks off the upright, which is like, you know. And it's like, when did they stop having kicker problems, right? They had that stretch in the playoff where they had, you know, some decent kicks from 40-plus, but then they kind of lost it in there. But thoughts on the second half? We'll go Zop, Sartan T, and then end up with Joe.
I think the game got out of hand at 31-7. Getting Quinshon Junkins the ball, who was the number one transfer steal, I think, in the portal period. And stealing it from Lane Kiffin actually just brings so much glowing to my heart, as he's got USC stink still on him. I think it was just the greatest pickoff in the world, because, you know, you take him to the program that can continue to sustain the NIL deal. You make it a two, you know, backfield, legitimate backfield. And that momentum, they said, there's the hot hand. Let's continue to run him. Total of three touchdowns for the game. But really, is that creating the separation on the scoreboard and having that momentum is, regardless of what Notre Dame was going to do at that point in the game, halfway through the third quarter, I think it was just way too much to cover up with just the raw athleticism that Ohio State has on the roster across. So Notre Dame, you know, finally put together a drive, 10-play drive, sustained drive, but in efficient manner, 5 minutes of total time, which they went down, got it, you know, so the distribution was better, all the things as far as the quick kind of shots, move the ball, don't eat up too much of the clock. It was not their friend at the time. But again, as by that time, it was just, you know, they started digging in the bag, you know, reverse, flick, pass, 2-point conversions. You know, how many times were we going to say lacrosse player? You know, yeah. We got phase on throwing the ball in the end zone.
Right.
But it was just too much to overcome. You know, they played better. They played more inspired football. You know, the wake up call, I think, in the locker room was a big deal. And when it got within 8, it's like, okay, we could play the onside kick game or the possession game and, you know, to put it all out on the line there. Ryan Day flat out said, if you go man on man with my freshman, I will beat you with that freshman.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think it was a pretty safe throw by Howard. Put the ball up, let him run underneath it, regardless if he wasn't going to score a touchdown, he was going to catch it, and that was going to seal the deal. So put him in position to kick that final field goal, close the game out, 11-point spread, which is about the way I thought, you know, the roster stacked up, the coaching stacked up. I think it kind of added up. It made it a little bit more exciting to watch in the second half, but I don't think 11 points was as close as the game really was.
Yeah, that's true. Sergeant Troutman, how about you?
The moment for me was the fake punt. When the fake punt failed and they went down and kicked that field goal, I mean, the game seemed like it was over at that point. The funniest moment of the second half was when the commentator said Ohio State doesn't fumble the ball, and then the next play they punched the ball out. That was hilarious, and that's the curse of the commentators right there.
Yeah, that's the old Sports Illustrated curse. Like, oh, you know, Thurman Thomas has never fumbled in a playoff game. Bloop, 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 bloop. Oh, there it goes.
But I mean, I agree with Zop. That throw to Smith, I mean, that was a backbreaker right there. That killed him. That took everything away. I mean, you can see it on the sidelines. The mannerisms and the gestures on the sidelines, they knew they were beaten at that point. It was over. But they, I mean, I give them credit. They scratched and clawed. They scratched and clawed for – I mean, Leonard, he took some hits. He took some hits in the second half trying to keep plays alive, so –
Yeah, that was the one number that I didn't get to. I didn't dive too deep into, but I was trying to see how many hurries they got, because they didn't get very many sacks, but they were in his face. And when your defensive line is going off like that, or like the one play where they dropped 8 in coverage and still got pressure on the quarterback, like
consistently with 4.
Yeah, like who does that? You know what I mean? And that shows you, like, you know, hey, look, there's two positions. Like, if you're a college football player and you're thinking about going to a big program, or you're being recruited by a big program, if you are a defensive end or a wide receiver, go to Ohio State, because those position coaches have been cranking out NFL level talent for the last few years. Like, if you want to go to like a different type of team, or if you just want to have a, you know, legit wide receiver room, I would argue that you know, Coach Hartline is probably the best wide receiver coach in college football. He may be better than some of the coaches in the pros, because look at the talent that he's coached. Now, all that being said, he's not the head coach. And the question is, like, you know, do these guys get poached? Because, like, when you look at the coaching staff at Ohio State, man, this guy's got, you know, head coaches and coordinator positions, which is, like, very, very uncommon. But it also, you know, it also shows you that, like, Ohio State was willing to go out and hunt and get the right people to shore up the team, because I think by taking a lot of the play calling responsibilities away from Ryan Day and allowing him to be the head coach, it allowed them to come up with better schemes.
Rob, I think your example of having previous head coaches, it's Chip Kelly. Okay, Chip Kelly is one of the premier player developers that we've had in the last 20 years. He used to deliberately go out and recruit 3 stars, max 4 stars at Oregon, and develop them, because he thought these are the ones that had the chip on the shoulder, that were going to work harder, and he could mold them to fit his system. And I think when NIL came in and he went to UCLA and he became more of a fundraiser than a developer, really took that edge off. Why am I even a head coach? So taking the opportunity to be able to focus on the offensive playbook instead of going out and seeing how many dollars we can raise to go get these premier players turned him back into a football coach. And I think he really likes that a lot.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I will tell you, I think the hidden gem, and then we'll turn it over to Joe for his thoughts of the second half, was that fake reverse into the freaking fade route that freaking Jeremiah Smith
it's
ran.
Alabama. It's like, the Alabama route.
Yeah, but it was like, holy crap, man. Like, who saw that coming? Because, again, like, it created a one-on-one situation, and the defensive back was calling for it. He's like, hey, man, you got to watch this dude. You got to watch number four, or something's going to happen with him, and he blew it up. All right, Joe, second half thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I completely concur that the writing was on the wall once it hit 31-7. I commend Notre Dame for having the heart to not go quietly into the night, but you can't, like I said earlier, you can't spot Ohio State 31 unanswered at any point in the game and come back from it. There's too many guys on that field that are going to play defense on Sundays for the Buckeyes to climb back from that. I wish Riley Leonard and Jaden Greathouse would have connected on a couple of those bombs in the first half before halftime, and maybe this game comes out a little differently. And to be honest with you, I don't think Notre Dame did anything terribly wrong other than looking like they wanted to wanted halftime to get here to rescue them in the second quarter. I think they just ran into a team that's recruited better year in and year out, smashed the transfer portal, and was deeper and more talented, and appeared to want it more. And, you know, I think with Ohio State, they were on a mission after they lost that Michigan game. And I honestly think that was the best thing for their national title hopes, was to have that letdown then than to have it a few weeks later.
Well, I mean,
I think that really tightened the screws on this team as, hey, we're either in it or we're not. And they dialed it in for the playoffs, and last night was just a culmination of it. And I think Notre Dame kind of ran into a buzzsaw there in the first half. And Ohio State looked like they were never really in danger of losing the game after they tied it up 7-7.
Yeah, I think you got to stay off social media because you get drug into some of the stupidest crap you'll ever see, right? So I heard a conspiracy theory this morning that somebody was like, oh, Ohio State threw the game against Michigan so they didn't have to play Oregon three times.
Said a person from Ohio.
Yeah, right. You know, said nobody from Ohio. It was just some, you know, it's a random prognosticator that was like, well, I ran the statistics with my, you know, my algorithm, and it looked better for Ohio State to lose to Michigan than it did for them to lose to Oregon twice. And they're like, I mean, at least if you lose to, you know, undefeated team, like that makes logical sense. Like, hey, they might have been the best team in the country. You know what I mean? But when you lose to your rival that's having like the not best season, you know, I mean, that was a difference for like, think about it, for Michigan, that like set them in the driver's seat, teed them up for great for their bowl game. And then they beat Alabama, you know? So like, I don't think if you're an Ohio State fan that I can believe that. If I'm a Michigan fan, I absolutely don't believe that, because I don't think, you know, particularly Ryan Day, four straight losses against, you know, your rival.
They almost lost the job. Yeah. Why would you throw that game?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think
he almost got John Cooper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Win 10 games a season and get fired.
Yeah. I just don't see that happening. But like this is the stuff that's out there. So please, like, stay off the internet. That's why you go to askforfootball.com to get your freaking sports news, because you don't want to hear that crap.
It is hard enough to beat a team twice in the same year anyway. And I think that even if, you know, they beat Michigan and they go to the Big Ten championship game, I think Ohio State, regardless of losing and having all that extra motivation to Michigan, I think they would have peeled Oregon apart on a neutral field when it's basically, as you know, Will Howard raised his hand and said, bad clock management. And I don't think Ryan Day and the coaching staff did a good enough job of saying, you have 3 seconds. The ball's out of your hands, or you get a run for 3 seconds, you get on timeout. Yeah. That's the only thing that beat them against Oregon the first time and playing at Oregon. So I think, again, to say that they threw the game is goofy because I think they would have got a piece of the Ducks in the championship game earlier as opposed to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and there's legit people that are saying that. But here's the other thing that that you have to ask the question about. And, you know, I am not an Oregon fan. I've been saying this for years that Oregon will never let me down.
We know.
In the latter half of the season, they're going to, you know, they're going to lay an egg literally. But one of the things that the question that you have to ask yourself is like, what film was Dan Lanning watching? Right. Because if I saw Ohio State torch Tennessee, like the game plan that you used in game one is not the game plan that I'm going to use.
They got it worse than Tennessee.
Yeah, like they
terrible.
They got
real. Nick was at that game, and he texted me like second quarter. He's like, "This is over."
Yeah,
it's over.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just like, wow. Like how does this happen? You know what I mean? And like, it's just a question. And I understand like players getting outplayed on the field. You know, losing a close one. I got that. But like, you're a coach. Like, you are paid to prepare your team for those types of situations. And like, you got skull drug like on national television in a game that like you were favored to win like significantly, you know. So I just don't know. But
we'll get to the time and season is a huge difference maker there too. I mean, if you look at Michigan's worst loss ever to App State, they finished that year by beating Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin in Florida. Same year they lost to App State. So yeah. I mean, you know, you catch a team at a certain time, they can be a whole different group of guys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Prime said that, right? He was like, "Hey, look, man, you better catch me early because mm-hmm. you're going to catch me next season." Right. And that's a fact. But, you know,
except for BYU.
True. True statement.
I'm sorry. No. Ow. Too soon.
No. Hey,
they got wrecked.
No, oh, yeah, they did. Like,
yeah, what happened there, man? I was that one, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
No.
But final stats in the game, you know, like the crazy part was Will Howard, 17 for 21, two TDs. He was the most accurate quarterback in the history of the college playoff, which is gross. You know, good for him, though, because that was the whole reason why he stayed. You know, Quinshon Judkins, 11 carries for 100 yards, two TDs, goes over 1,000 yards for the season. And I would say he at least gets the helmet sticker for being the MVP of the Buckeyes offense in the championship game. I mean, he played similarly to Ezekiel Elliott, you know, maybe not as prolific in the running game, but like being the Swiss Army knife and providing a lot of support to the rest of the offense. I think that was it. And then Emeka Abuka quietly with six catches, you know, became the all-time leading reception leader at Ohio State. Like,
been singing this guy's praises for 3 years.
And like, how does that happen? Like, you know what I mean? But again, it just goes to show you the level of talent that they have in the wide receiver room. Like, there are other areas that friggin' Ohio State needs to shore up probably in the offseason, but the wide receiver room, I'm never concerned about because I think those guys have a pretty consistent recruiting and
I think accounting. They have so much money to manage. They got to get better at math. Okay, yeah. I mean it's unreal. There's the dollars around you. You get out of there with a doctorate in economics if you can manage their NIL budget.
Yeah, that's fair because they have a lot of stuff going on, but. Speaking of people that have stuff going on but not being able to get it done, let's move over to Joe's Blue Falcon of the Week.
Yeah, this is going to sound harsh, but you know it's the Michigan fan in me. This is an easy one. My Blue Falcon of the Week is the Notre Dame fan base that I've had to listen to for the entirety of the playoffs. I'm talking to the Rudy watching, Lou Holtz quoting goons that have been talking about ancient history when Notre Dame was elite for the last month. Am I biased because I'm a Michigan fan? Maybe. But trust me, I know Notre Dame fans, and they go just as hard on Michigan fans if they choke in the spotlight. So I'm going to ask, how many times in a row does Notre Dame have to have a season where they don't go undefeated when they set their own schedule so they can beat up on the service academies, claim they're elite, and lose to Alabama by 67? It's like Groundhog's Day every time this team gets in the national spotlight. Ohio State wasn't unbeatable. Trust me. Been proven. So for the whole playoffs, I've been hearing about how great this Notre Dame team is. And yes, they were a very good team. But if you guys had to play Ohio State's schedule, you would have lost four games. And I'll stand on that statement until you join a conference and stop hoodwinking America every few years by claiming this is your year, then dump one in week two to NIU. Notre Dame fan base, you know who you are. Come get your T-shirt because you're my Blue Falcon of the Week. Now, I don't mean to kick you when you're down, But man, they've been chirping all week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, fan base, they said about 55% of Atlanta was Notre Dame fans that like ticket sales. But speaking of shenanigans, man, like let's talk really quick about the transfer portal. Xavier Lucas is the craziest story I think that's out there right now with the transfer portal. Like, how does this kid like basically lock in an NIL contract, transfer to another school, and still have guaranteed money with his NIL contract at Wisconsin? And like he's going to the U. Like, unbelievable.
Well, it was cold. Okay, I think he's Pompano Beach. I mean, he's going back home. Okay, and God bless him. I mean, it's like I'm going to go to Madison, Wisconsin when I'm from Florida. I'm going to make all this money. No. I'm just going to go home. Okay, yeah. I'm not going to transfer. I don't even know what the portal is. All I know is that American Airlines has directs down to Miami. Okay,
could be 85 degrees by noon. Later.
Yeah, I mean. Maybe. Do we think that there's tampering there? I'm not going to say that Mario Cristobal would do anything underhanded to get the kid to come to the school. But, I mean, like, it's too convenient, you know, that it happens. It did happen late, so it's like, yeah, so maybe it is later. You know, it is freaking January in Wisconsin. It's probably cold as, you know, as all get out.
I'm 20 minutes to Ann Arbor.
$4 million Georgia 8 Mile. You know, and so you get him, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I have a quarterback. Well, unbeknownst to everybody else, is this guy's going to choke just like he did? And I mean, I think the worst investment at NIL already set the standard in the offseason by getting Carson Beck to go to Miami.
I agree with you 100%. Like, I 1,000% do not think, like, he's the number one. Like, if you look at multiple sites that track the portal, they have him as the number one transfer portal quarterback. And you're just like, really? Do we think so?
I don't. I mean, you got to evaluate a couple of things. I mean, how bad is that injury, and how bad is he going to be gun-shy next year at that first time someone comes in and hits him? That's what I would look at.
Yeah, I mean, it was an economic decision. I mean, $4 million to be able to fall back and say, I had a massive injury and not perform as well in college football this year in 2025. So yeah. I think it was a very smart, I think it was a wise decision when he said he was going to go out to the pros, and then he gets hurt. And then all of a sudden it's like the rules change. It's like, how can I keep on collecting the money? Because he's one of the guys driving, I think he's a Lambo guy, if I'm correct, you know, driving that to school. How are you going to sustain that lifestyle? You know, stay in school one more time and screw up Miami to enable them to choke even harder. Higher probability of choke for Miami just went up, ACC fans.
that's a fair point. Joe, you look like you got something.
You know, it's hard for me to, like, be sour about anything in the transfer portal, given that the number one transfer portal pull class is Michigan's pull. You know, they got Mikey Keene coming in from Fresno to back up Bryce Underwood, which I think is going to be a beautiful addition. Give this guy a veteran who's played. And was Mikey Keene a world beater? Probably not. I've seen a couple of his games, but, you know, they go out and get Justice Haynes, a 5-star running back from Alabama. Payne, who's another 5-star defensive tackle out of Alabama. Michigan's cleaning up. And I think they took them a few years to figure it out. And, you know, my dad said that to me when it first started. He goes, Michigan, they haven't figured out the transfer portal yet. And so he goes, they haven't figured out the NIL yet. And I said, what haven't they figured out? He goes, Stephen Ross owns the Dolphins. They have a business school on campus named after him. Pretty big degree to get a school, Ross School of Business degree. That's global. Like, they aren't tapping into their resources. You know, lo and behold, Larry Elston's wife is a diehard Wolverine fan, and now Bryce Underwood's coming to Michigan, which that kid was always coming to Michigan. They weren't going to let him leave and go to LSU without taking their shot. They shot their shot, $10 million to a 17-year-old kid. He's coming. He's coming. And $10 million to Larry Elston, dropping the bucket like it is for Elon Musk.
How much do you think?
And that's not even an exaggeration. Larry Elston is one of the top 5 richest men in America.
So that's a good question.
$10 million to him is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, so Dave Portnoy. I mean, he went.
And Portnoy, yeah. Said, well, it was Portnoy, Elston, and Underwood's mom that had the phone call.
Yeah. And so that is, you know, those are these larger bases. And obviously, you know, Talented Michigan, it's got its business and, you know, it's making a kajillion dollars now. Those are the people that are now associated with these big time traditional powerhouses that are coming home. Detroit is a major metropolitan area, you know, and again, it's how many more donors can they influence, big time donors, like corporate donors, can they influence to come in and just go and go and get the best players there are?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and the other part, I'm not necessarily a fan of that being how Michigan gets a leg up. But if that's where we're going in college football, it really gives Michigan an upper hand that they didn't have before. Because at 0 degrees right now, and I'm sitting in 20 minutes from the stadium. It's zero here. I'm going to get colder overnight. So we also have to deal with the climate issues. But, I mean, think of some of these kids aren't coming from the best situations. They're not coming from a home where – they're coming from a home where the mom is counting on them. Like, counting on them to come through and be the pro athlete in the family. And I'm not saying every kid's story is like a movie. But you flash that kind of money in front of a 17-year-old and his family's in need. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't necessarily like it. It makes me feel like I need a shower talking like this about high school kids. But it's happening. And there's a lot of oil tycoons that support Southern Methodist football that are sitting back going, hey, come on, man.
It's like, how sustainable do you think it is to continue year over year to keep on the ask? I mean, to go from, you know, the highest NIL people were averaging, I think, $2.5 million to already leap to $4 million for 1 year for Carson Beck. And then to pull the freshmen out, these are going to have to be long-term contracts.
Yeah,
and
once the money like starts business, getting pulled back. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you know, it's, you know, it's like – you know, I'd say, you know, Portnoy makes a lot of money, but how many more times is he going to kick in his own dollars to go get a quarterback just because he's a Michigan fan?
Right. That's tough. And that's the thing, like with Portnoy, a lot of people, Dave Portnoy, love him to death. Love the fact that he's on Michigan's side. But not to throw shade on the man when he's not here to defend himself, but Dave Portnoy is a degenerate gambler. He bet $1 million on the Rose Bowl last year, Alabama and Michigan. He's following the investment. He's got a whole team. I watched him fire two guys, and it's because he's got cameras in his shop, and it came like public internet. You know, it was public information. He fired two guys for telling them about a guy who was on a hot streak gambling. He's like, you were on a heater and you didn't tell me. Like, he let the guys go because he puts up that much money. Now, that's not a really good look for Dave Portnoy, but he makes his own money and he can do what he wants with it. But
the other thing is,
be good for different reasons.
Yeah, but we all know the rules. You don't talk about somebody when they're on a heater, right? I mean,
yeah.
Well,
we also task him with stuff to do.
When you know? He's here, we've done something very right.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's part of it, though. Is it's like, so when you look at the teams that have like pulled the most out of the portal, at least by 24/7 Sports, you've got LSU, Ole Miss, Texas Tech, Auburn, and Miami. And so you're getting a good mix of freaking ACC, Big 12, and SEC teams. LSU needed it. I mean, quite frankly, they got to find some talent. You know, Ole Miss, like
– and a coach.
Yeah. Ole Miss, I don't know, man. Like, Lane Kiffin is an offensive genius, but, like, you know, if you're stealing all his pieces and parts, he's going to have to go find more. Texas Tech, that's really an anomaly. Like, I don't see them having any impact – you know, in the Big 12 at all. I mean, they had a great season. Not going to take anything away from them, but just not like, hey, they're going to make the playoff kind of season. You know, I just don't think that they're that kind of team. Auburn has to rebuild. I acknowledge that. And then Miami has got to do something because it was not a good look. I mean, I don't care what anybody says when, you know, your Heisman Trophy finalist quarterback steps down at halftime and you lose by less than a score. Like, hey, man,
you know,
like,
football purist, that kind of stuff makes me nauseous.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's the game that we're at right now, which is unfortunate because I legitimately think business like
decision.
People, kids are making business decisions and good on them. Right. Like if we had a chance to get paid in college to do anything, like we probably would have taken them up on it. I mean, let's be honest. If it's something that I enjoy, I would do it.
You can look at a guy and say, are you going to do something nobody else is doing? You know, most of them are going to be like, well, you know. Half the guys that are going to play on Sunday sat out the non-playoff bowl games. Yeah. Probably more than half.
Yep.
Why am I going to go risk it to prove a point that's only moving farther away from that direction of winning the game and being a team player?
Yeah. Well, I'll close with this. And this was the, if you never listened to the interview of, what's his name? Cyclist, world champion guy that got busted for blood. Yeah, Lance Armstrong, right? What did Lance Armstrong say? He's like, the only reason why everybody got upset with me was because I got caught and I was the most public face, right? Everybody is doing it. So if everybody is doing it, then, you know, at some point it probably merits investigation, but it also means that, you know, it's part of the system. And in order to overcome the system, there's going to be an overhaul. And I think right now the NC2A doesn't have the teeth to regulate this right now. You know, no. I mean, like you're looking at kids like getting money promised to them and then not getting paid, or, you know, conditions change. And like I said, we don't name, image, and likeness is to prevent pay to play. However, I will say this, and I will like, this will be, I won't say the hill that I die on, but this will definitely be a point that I will stand firm on, is that the single greatest rookie contract ever written in the NFL was Ricky Williams. Right? Hey, these are my stats. If I hit those stats, it releases more funds. We need to do that in college football, because if we don't get to that point where these folks that are supporting these name, image, and likeness deals are not giving these kids gates to hit, you're going to have guys sitting out like, hey, look, I will sign you to a $2 million contract predicated on the fact that you play 13 games. You know, if you don't play 13 games, I will release the funds at the first game of the next season, you know, if I only play 12 or something to that effect. There's got to be some kind of contract look, it's going to suck. I don't want to be a contract lawyer. I don't want to set that kind of thing up.
At what point did the students start suing the schools? I mean, that's going to start happening too.
They have.
No, yeah. They did. They can get paid as students and be part of the union because they're treated and considered as employees.
Yeah.
Which is totally bizarre.
And that's why it gives the NCAA no teeth. And my question is, who is the governing body outside of the money? And because I think eventually some of these benefactors are going to be like, hey, I don't give a shit what the price is. I'm not paying that.
Yeah, well, look at what happened to Coastal Carolina in the last couple of years, right? The Tealbackers, they had this big, huge freaking group of dudes that were throwing money at the program to help them out with NIL. And then they just stopped, you know. And I've got some, you know, I got friends that have former players in their freaking network. And they're like, yeah, right now, if you are an NIL investor, depending upon what team you're going to, you don't get anything for that. You're literally just throwing money at a kid to play football. You know, that's it. You don't get, you know, sideline passes. You're not getting a plaque on the wall. You're not getting anything from the university, because that's a, you know, think about it, because it is an exchange between the investor, for lack of a better term, and the players. So that's a personal transaction, you know, without the third party, i.e. the university or the NC2A stepping in. So there's no benefit for you to give them any money other than the fact that you gave a kid money in the hopes that he plays well. Like,
when you see some of these kids' requests, you can tell that nobody is checking them. You know, when a kid writes, I want a, you know, a car for three or four of my family members, and this is my, like, you can tell no one is governing that. And it's up to, it's almost like a transaction between two business owners, because, you know, you own your own body, you're a company of one, and then the person with the money that writes the checks is probably the owner of his company. And it's like, look at the 30 for 30 ESPN did called Broke.
Yeah.
Where these guys have CEO's money with a 11th grade education in finance.
Yeah. Well, and I think that should be part of like NIL as a whole. Like, I don't know if you, like, years ago, I did an interview with a gentleman from Old Dominion University in the player management place. And one of the things that they do is they make that a minor for every student that has an NIL deal. And so you're graded as a capstone based off of the amount of money that you can manage to make, obtain, and, you know, do something with as part of, you know, your college experience. Like, if you're going to be a collegiate level athlete and you're going to get paid to do so, like, I have to have some mechanism to force you to actually care. Right. So maybe I attach a grade to it.
Yeah. Well, you should just hire the financial advisors as a specialty member of the team. They travel with them. It's like, hey, here's investment 101, and here's what bonds are, and here's what stocks are, and here's how to maximize your money. And I mean, shoot, put a pool together, you know, pool your money, invest it together, do something smart.
And that's what NFL players do, right? Like, hey, part of the reason why some of those guys are so successful and they have lasting money is because they pool these things together, invest in something, and it goes big. And if you do lose money, you're only losing $100,000 rather than, you know, the whole wagon of it that you got before. All right. We could talk about this all day because we're all college football nerds, and we will go very, very deep into the name, image, and likeness thing, because I think it has changed the game and it affects the way that people watch and enjoy football. But we're going to wrap this up really quick. But if you are Ask for Football fan and you're listening to this show right now, we would encourage you to check out all other Army sports. You know, we cover Army football primarily. We have Ask for Baseball coming up. Just for SA, Army men's basketball is currently 4-2. They're second in the Patriot League. Army women's basketball is 5-1, and they're tied for first place in the Patriot League. Like, that's amazing. Great weekend stand with Army men's hockey. They're currently 9-15, but they're on a decent winning streak, which I'm not going to call out the numbers to not break it, but they just won two substantial back-to-back wins against Air Force this weekend, so they're leading in the Star Series. And as a note for Dano, since he's not here, both Army men and women's swimming and diving beat Navy in December. So Army sports is always, like, they're on fire right now. They're still doing really great. And look forward to catching them out for the rest of the season. But, hey, this is the wrap for the show, guys. Unbelievable. The 2024 season is over. And I'd like to thank Sark Troutman and Zot for coming in so it wouldn't just be me and Joe staring at each other for the next 50-plus minutes. College Football Roundtable is going into its summer hibernation, so we'll be working on our beach body while shoveling down food to make ourselves fat so we can sleep. Keep an eye out for Ask for Football website for spring sports updates. We'll occasionally pop in and do a show after, like, the spring game. If baseball's hot or lacrosse is hot, you'll probably get an Ask for Lax or Ask for Baseball show at some point in the offseason. Ask for Baseball is coming soon. If you are a freelance writer, and we're going to put this out again, if you are a freelance writer and you want to cover Lady Lax for Army, shoot Dano a note, because we are looking for a staff writer that is passionate about the game and understands it, because, like, it's a lot of games to understand and it's a lot of different skills and rules to learn. And, like, sometimes we just don't have the capacity to do that. So if you are a true fan of a particular sport and you want to cover it, reach out to Ask for Football and see what we can do. For the crew here at College Football Roundtable, thanks for joining us all season for the coverage. We'd like to thank our sponsors, the First to Club members and Patreon, and anyone else that just tuned in for our little corner of college football this season. And again, we thank you for all the support. For the crew here at Ring Knocker Radio, I'm Rob the Anger Colonel, calling out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got the notorious ZOP joining us. Zop, always great to see you and have you on the show. Staff Sergeant Troutman, once again, thank you. Pick up his book. Google his name, and you can find it on Amazon and where all your books are sold. And Trigger Joe, calling from the home of the Big House. And yes, I'm going to give one last shout out to Joe and the Michigan Wolverines for being the only team to beat the Alabama Crimson Tide in a calendar year twice. We got to rub that in, because, you know, for all of our SEC fans, they're going to be crying about that until football season starts next year. So we might as well remind them so they have something to cry in their beer about. Anyway, for the crew here, thanks again for joining us. I'm Rob the Angry Colonel. And hey, as always, beat Navy, and we will see you guys next season. Thanks. Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.